wasn't about weight loss, but it's about health gain. As long as you're doing what's good and good for you, more often than not, then you're heading in the right direction.
Hi, welcome to Resonate, conversations and life lessons from Rancho La Puerta. I'm your host, Barry. I don't know about you, but I've heard the saying over and over again, you are what you eat. But more and more evidence points to that is true. What we put into our bodies is such a big part of our well-being. Here at the ranch, we are so fortunate that we have our own organic farm. Most of the vegetables and fruits that we serve our guests are harvested on a daily basis. The ranch serves eggs, we have chickens on our organic farm, dairy, and fish, besides lots of fresh fruits and vegetables. Sometimes it's thought that you have to sacrifice taste and excitement to eat healthy. That doesn't always have to be the case. It is the case if you're eating at my house. But here at the ranch, that is not the case. We have our own cooking school located at the organic garden, La Cocina Cacanta. And each week, we host a guest chef from all around the world that teach our guests how to cook and eat healthy, delicious meals. My guest today is one of those chefs, Virginia Willis. She's a French-trained, James Beard Award-winning cookbook author from Atlanta. She has written 7 cookbooks, is a TV and video personality, a content creator, a motivational speaker, and a social media influencer. She has created her own brand, Good and Good For You. The Chicago Tribune calls her one of the 7 food writers you need to know. Virginia walks her talk. In 2019, she lost 65 pounds, and she has maintained this new weight and her new healthy lifestyle. Let's learn how. Hey, Virginia, thanks for joining me today. I really appreciate you taking the time.
Hey.
And I know you're really busy, but it just so happens you are our featured chef at the ranch this week, so I've been able to catch you here at the ranch. Thanks for spending your time.
Oh my gosh, I'm so excited to talk to you. And obviously I love Rancho La Puerta, but I'm honored to be on your podcast. Thank you.
No, I'm honored to have you. So you are a guest chef and you teach classes at our cooking school out at the organic garden, La Cocina Cacanta, and you teach for our guests and you also do a meal. What is it like to cook out at our cooking school?
Well, first of all, La Cocina Cacanta is one of the most beautiful kitchens I've ever been in, and I've been in a lot of kitchens. So we start there, but I literally on the organic breakfast hike this morning described to a guest that being able to come and to cook at the cooking school and to be at Rancho La Puerta is really, truly one of the favorite things that I get to do in my career. It's just, it's amazing. It's the gardens, the school, the environment, the guests, the staff, it's just beautiful.
And I think the cool thing for a lot of people is that the food is just right there outside the window and you can actually go pick it.
What I love the most is so Dora and Chef Reyna, several weeks ago, they sent me a list from Salvador, the head gardener, of what is going to be harvested this week or what would be anticipated to be harvested this week. And so the guest chefs are actually able to design the menu completely around what's coming out of the garden. And so literally almost everything on the menu is freshly harvested from the garden. And the freshness of the food, the quality of the food, the taste of the food is just so much better.
Yeah, when I eat out there, I'm just always blown away at the difference than if I just go to the grocery store and buy stuff.
Oh, it's 10,000% different.
So you're from Atlanta, is that correct?
Born and raised, but I live in Atlanta now. So yes, I'm a native Georgian.
A native Georgian. So what inspired you to become a chef?
I've always loved to cook, Barry. So I have some of my earliest memories are being in the kitchen with my mother and my grandmother. Unfortunately, I don't have a photograph of it, but my grandmother had a double basin steel sink and she would put me in one side of the sink and like shell peas in the other. So I feel like I've been in the sink almost since birth. And my grandmother was a phenomenal Southern cook. My mother is still with us. My mother is a phenomenal cook. And it's always been my happy place. And I'm fortunate that I was able to turn my passion, my purpose, and the way I make my living are all rolled into one. I feel very gifted and blessed with that.
It's so funny because just last night when I was interviewing Sarah, Livia, and Deborah, they were talking about the cooking school. And one of the reasons they said they started the cooking school is because there's a whole generation of people that got careers and are missing out on how to prepare food. And also what you said about being with your grandma and your mom in the kitchen and cooking and what a bonding experience that is.
Right.
And it's like family, and we've lost that art kind of. So bringing it back is amazing.
I think so. And I agree. I think that several things happen. So first of all, you know, modern conveniences to sort of take the labor out of the kitchen started in the 50s and 60s. And that's where you had boxes of hamburger helper or this, that, or the other. And then I think it for women, especially because once upon a time, women were expected to do all the cooking, all the cleaning, all the household chores. And if someone wanted to not do that, they adamantly stayed away from it and went off, and women became, you know, powerful career people. But it doesn't have to be mutually exclusive. We still need to feed ourselves.
Right. And like Sarah Olivia said last night, men can cook too, and men do a lot of the cooking now too. So
exactly.
It's not a gender thing. It's changed a lot, which is great.
Right, right. This is true.
So did you have any career before you became a chef, or did you just know always that that's what you were going to do?
No, I actually have a degree in history from the University of Georgia, which for many years did not translate into the work that I do. But now I'm not only a chef, but I'm also a food writer. So that liberal arts education has come full circle and is helpful to me now. No, immediately out of college, I wound up in retail management, and I was just miserable. And I remember being, I was like 25 years old, and I can remember thinking, oh my gosh, I am so unhappy. This is not what life is supposed to be like. And somewhat comically, I remember thinking like, well, you're supposed to be unhappy at middle-aged, but you're not supposed to be unhappy when you're 25. Of course, now I know we're not actually supposed to be unhappy, right? We're supposed to be happy and satisfied and productive and with purpose our whole lives. So I been cooking my whole life for friends and for family. And everyone just kept encouraging me, why don't you go to cooking school? Why don't you go to cooking school? And so finally I went to cooking school. And before that, I met a mentor who sort of took me under her wing and helped me to find my path in culinary. And I've been basically cooking since I was in my mid-20s. So most of my life.
So was there a particular catalyst that you think that made you finally do that? Or was it a gradual process?
Well, it wasn't like one specific thing that I can't put my finger on, but it was a realization that I was not happy in my life. I was not happy with what I was doing. I was simply working to pay bills. And there's something I kind of came upon lately. It's like, we're on this earth to do more than pay bills and die. And so I sort of hit that at 25. I was just unhappy. And like I said, in retail management, and it was terribly unsatisfying for me. It might be satisfying for someone else. But I was able to start working with my mentor, Natalie Dupree. I apprenticed with her for a year and really started learning more about food. And it's just been a journey ever since.
I read that you're French trained. So where did you go to school?
My first culinary school was L'Académie de Cuisine, which was a form, it's now closed, but it was a culinary school in the Washington, D.C. area. And then I attended there for a year and worked in restaurants while I was in school to help pay my way through school and did what's called a stage, an apprenticeship. And then after that, I knew that I wanted to travel, and I also knew that I needed exposure to other things, and I really wanted to go to France. So I was able to become a stagiaire, someone, an apprentice at École de Cuisine La Varenne, which was a culinary school first in Paris and then in Burgundy. And so I was supposed to be in France for 3 months, and I was in France almost for 3 years. I fell in love with it.
Yeah. I noticed that a lot of your cookbooks have a Southern theme. I mean, I think every cookbook ends with y'all. Is that your signature?
many of them.
Yeah. So when you started cooking, I know that you've kind of made this shift to healthy Southern cooking. But when you started, was it not healthy?
No. And that, thank you for asking that. That's a wonderful question, because there is a perception that all Southern food is unhealthy. It's just not accurate. And what sort of my analogy for that is that to judge all Southern food as fried chicken and biscuits would be like describing all Mexican food as a burrito or all Italian food as spaghetti, right? It's a much more complex cuisine. So in the beginning for my cookbooks and then also in real life, right, it was a blend. It was a blend. So we have a 12-month growing season, and there are fruits and vegetables coming out of the ground or off the trees nearly 12 months out of the year. So in the beginning, my recipes were probably more indulgent, leaning a little bit more into the more indulgent side of French cooking and the more indulgent side of Southern cooking. But all along, there's been wonderful, you know, vegetable dishes and less indulgent things.
Right. So do you cook meat? Is that one of your things?
I do. I'm an omnivore.
Yes, okay.
I do. Probably now with my health journey, I am more plant-based than previously, leaning more into pescatarianism than previously, vegetarianism than previously. I wind up having, according to what our doctors suggest, I probably eat seafood once or twice a week. I eat a lot of white poultry, chicken and turkey. And then I do eat red meat, but I usually eat red meat about once every week and a half or 2 weeks. I try to moderate it, but I don't miss it. It doesn't feel like deprivation. It's just the cycle that my eating habits have evolved to.
Right. So you won a James Beard Award as a...
I didn't hear you.
Well,
I'm teasing.
It's for being a cookbook writer, correct?
So Correct.
I hear James Beard all the time, and I hear that and Michelin star. Those are the only two things
right.
I hear about the food industry, But who is James Beard, and why is that such a big award?
Oh, sure. That's a great question. So James Beard was a food writer and caterer in New York City, and he was tremendously powerful. Let's see, he would be the equivalent of today, say someone like Guy Fieri or Rachel Ray, like a big superstar. He was a superstar. He wrote for the New York Times. He wrote cookbooks. He wrote magazines. He was actually from the West Coast. And he was hugely influential. And when he passed away, the James Beard Foundation was eventually formed. And a James Beard Award is the sort of like the cooks, the culinarians version of an Oscar. So that's our highest award. And so James Beard Awards are given to cookbook authors like myself, restaurateurs, people who own restaurants, sommeliers. There are many different awards under the James Beard Foundation. They have a James Beard podcast award, Barry. So
we have
to try for that.
I'll try for that.
Yes. And then Michelin. So Michelin would be the other award that you mentioned. And Michelin is fascinating. So are you familiar with Michelin car tires?
Yeah, of course.
Like the tire on a car?
Yeah, okay.
So when Michelin car tires started, when they started producing tires, they developed a restaurant guide to encourage people to drive.
Oh.
So what would they do? They would wear their tires out. And it eventually evolved into this. It is the most prestigious and most serious awards. Like, so you'll see something's a 5-star or 4-star. Well, the Michelin 3-star is the top. And so there are stars for restaurants. And then there are also restaurants that get a nod. And in fact, Chef Reina and her husband, their restaurant here in Tecate has received a Michelin star.
That's tremendous. I know, it's amazing. It is tremendous.
It's tremendous.
Do individual people get Michelin stars or no? It's just for the restaurant.
It is for the restaurant. So for example, if a restaurant receives a Michelin award, the chef doesn't take it. He or she does not take it with them. It is the restaurant because, and you'll understand this, like being in hospitality here at the ranch, it's a group effort.
Right.
It's not just the chef. It's the sommelier. It's not just the chef and the sommelier. It's the maitre d'. It's the wait staff. It's the people who clean the forks. I mean, it's a multi-purpose, multi-effort event.
Yeah. My roommate works at a 3 Michelin star restaurant in San Diego, actually. So,
wow.
Yeah.
That's high cotton.
Yeah. He's the head sommelier. Is that how you say it?
Uh-huh. Sommelier.
Yeah. Sommelier. Yeah. So it's very cool. So you've got to work with some notable chefs.
Yes.
I'm curious, your cookbook writing probably comes from your background in history and being a good writer. Is that what kind of edged you towards the writing the cookbooks along with being a chef?
Yes. So it's interesting. My first job cooking was actually on a TV cooking show. So I think that when people hear the word chef, they automatically think restaurateur. But the culinary world, the culinary profession is actually quite vast. So my first job was on a TV cooking show, working for a woman behind the scenes as an apprentice in the kitchen. Because if you're watching a TV cooking show, someone has to put the ingredients on the counter. Someone has
to do all
the
prepping.
Exactly. Someone has to make those cookies that are being pulled out of the oven. So my first job cooking was there. She also wrote cookbooks. So my introduction was through more of the media side, the food writing and media side. So I have worked in restaurants, but much of my career has been more on the media side of culinary.
Yeah, I noticed that. And was that a conscious effort or decision or not really? It just kind of happened organically.
No, it was a conscious decision. Even though I've worked in restaurants, and sometimes it's a bit, it's interesting because people are like, oh, yes, I'm sure it's so stressful to work in a restaurant. And, you know, well, my answer to that is if you want to see stressful, then try telling Martha Stewart that you don't have what she needs at 7 o'clock in the morning. Right. That, my friend, can be quite stressful. So it's the work that feeds us. And not feeds our belly, but feeds our heart, right? So I always enjoyed that. And I've always enjoyed the creativity and just that particular niche. So it was a decision. The woman that mentored me, the woman that I worked for in France, coming back to the States and working for Martha Stewart, working on The Joy of Cooking. I'm a pretty intentional person.
Yeah, yeah. So do you have any fun little stories about working on Martha Stewart or with Natalie Dupree that you're willing to share?
I have to be careful about the Martha stories.
Yeah.
No, I think one of the best things about Martha Stewart, working with Martha Stewart, is that she's an incredibly inspiring person. She really does want to learn something new every day. The people that I worked for and worked with at Martha, everyone super talented. You have all the tools that you need to do your job. You have the access to the best possible ingredients. And we were well compensated, right? So it was like a really just a trifecta of everything you want in a job. Stress level pretty high.
Yeah, I can imagine.
But there's a payoff, right? Like there's a high expectation. One of my favorite stories about Martha, we were able, when President Clinton was president, when I was working for Martha, and we did a luncheon for President Clinton. And I had peaches shipped from Georgia. I had salmon caught for me and sent from Alaska. Like I called the fisherman up and said, I need some salmon for a luncheon. They went out that afternoon, caught it, shipped it to me that day. And I had it less than 24 hours later to serve to the president. So a lot of really wonderful experiences cooking in those kitchens.
Yeah, I mean, I might like to cook if I had that kind of power and I could just call up and say,
hey,
I would love to have this delivered.
Yeah. It's not always rosy, but yeah.
Hi, I'm Carol Jones. I'm from Toronto, Canada, and I've been coming to the ranch for a very long time, since 1990, and it's my special place. It's my home, really. It really is. And every time I come back, I find more new, interesting things that the ranch is offering. It's been transformative. I've had huge life lessons living here. It's helped me through some very rough times and some changes in my life. And one of the new things at the ranch that I'm really enjoying is Barry's podcast. I love the people that he is inviting on. They're warm. They've had transformations in their own lives. They bring new things to the listener and they connect me with some of the things that I've experienced here at the ranch. So it's kind of like coming home in a way through reconnection, but it's also introducing me to new people that I don't know anything about. So one of the things as a doctor I've noticed over the years, and I'm a holistic doctor, is that patients want a more heart-centered approach to their treatment. They want you to see them as a person and not just as a illness or a condition. And so what I think is really important about that kind of work is that focusing more on having that connection with your patients or in corporate world as well, or in any work you do, is essential to what's coming for us in the next, you know, how many years. And I really appreciate all the ranch does in this area for me. And I hope you enjoy it too.
I hope you're enjoying today's podcast as much as I am. To learn more about our wonderful presenters and exciting weeks coming up at the ranch, go to rancholaporta.com and check out our events calendar. Make sure to mention the podcast when making your reservation to take advantage of a special offer. Some restrictions may apply. So do you aspire to have your own show?
Well, I have. And I have to tell you, I was green-lighted for a PBS series on WGBH several years ago, and we were not able to secure funding. And it was a tragedy. And it was one of the hardest things in my career. It was a dream that I had my whole life. And having been in food television for many years, so not being able to achieve that goal was devastating. I won't deny it. It was really devastating. But at the end, the takeaway that I have from that is that if you don't try, you're guaranteed to fail. If you don't try, you'll never know. And so now I just have a different attitude about it. And it's not to say that it still isn't exist in the ether as something as a dream. But at the same time, I suppose I'm a little bit less focused on it. And one of the reasons is that technology has changed completely. Once upon a time, we had to get our content through television, and now we can get our content through a phone or our content through a podcast. And there are many different ways to share messages now.
That's true. So now you have is it a new cookbook or it's a revised version of a cookbook?
Yeah.
What is that? Tell us about that.
So thank you. My first cookbook was called Bon Appetit, Y'all. And so you've got the y'all there and the French and the Southern. And
I love it.
I love it too. It really encapsulates my style of cooking. So I'm French trained and Southern. And it may not seem that they're similar, but country cooking is sort of country cooking pretty much around the world, right? So it sounds fancy. It's coq au vin. It's not coq au vin, it's chicken stew. It sounds fancy. It's bœuf bourguignon. It's beef stew. So,
right. Yeah.
Bon Appetit, Y'all came out originally in 2008. And it was awarded the first cookbook put on the list that all Georgians should read. I'm very proud of it. And what happened was I had the opportunity to secure it from Random House and to share it with the University of Georgia Press. And so we've revised it and updated it, and I've added over 20 photographs, new recipes. I was able to tweak the recipes to make them more healthy. Not all of them. I'm not going to mess with fried chicken, right? I'm not going to mess with classic buttermilk biscuits. But I was able to modify the recipes that would be adaptable to being a little bit lighter. I also rewrote the introduction to address my health journey and to address my weight loss. And it comes out in October 2024. And it's Mediterranean diet with a Southern accent.
I love that. Love it. So do you have a favorite meal?
Well, I can't deny that I do say that Southern food is more than fried chicken and biscuits. But I mean, come on, my gosh. Yeah, fried chicken and biscuits. When my grandmother was alive, it didn't matter if I came home at 2 o'clock in the morning or if I got home at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. When I got there, my grandmother would be frying chicken for me. And so it really is my soul.
Yeah, it's your soul. That's more than just eating. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. So do you see any trends in the culinary industry in the future?
Yes, I think for many reasons, more and more people are going plant-based. It's not just for health. It's also a result of climate change. I mean, food production requires a tremendous amount of energy. So I think that the trend will continue with more plant-based foods, more vegetarian foods, more vegan foods. I think that there is the pendulum of everything was like out of a box and easy to prepare. You know, people are going back to wanting to know where their food came from. We are increasingly aware of, like, many of the guests this week at the ranch, Lenny Felton has expressed, like, we don't know what GMO does. Like, we don't really understand, like, the long-term implications. So I believe that there's going to be a continued merge and a return to food as medicine.
I love that. So I want to talk about your personal journey too, because in 2019, you lost 65 pounds. That's a significant amount of weight.
Yes, sir.
And then you've kept it off and you've kept your new lifestyle. So what was the catalyst in 2019? What happened? And how did you do it? And how do you maintain it?
Thank you. 2019 is when I sort of hit the 65. So I did it slowly. But where it really started was I had written a book several years ago called Lighten Up, Y'all, which was great. And I had wanted to lose 50 pounds, but I never could quite lose 50 pounds. I got to 40. And I realized now that I was dieting and I was just watching what I ate. And so a media company approached me. They wanted to feature me. It was Weight Watchers. They wanted to feature me in their magazine. And I had gained some of the weight back. A lot of life had happened. My partner at the time had cancer. Her parents moved in with us. It was very stressful. And so I had lost 40 pounds, but then I gained a lot of it back. And I once again just realized I am unhappy. I'm unhappy in my body. So Weight Watchers wanted to feature me. And I said, no, I've gained some weight back. It's not a good idea. And they sort of kept pushing. And so finally I said, okay, well, here's my login information. And, you know, well, they ghosted me and they didn't write me a little note back saying, yes, you're right. You're too heavy or whatever. And it shamed me. It was a terrible shaming. Mm-hmm. And I realized I needed to do something. And that was a very much, I can put my finger directly on that, that that was the kicker that made me want to change my life. So I was overwhelmed with the concept of losing 65 pounds. That's a lot of weight. Mm-hmm. And so I just decided that I wanted to head in the direction of healthy and strong. Mm-hmm. And I started exercising. I started incorporating things that I had learned at the ranch, right? Literally, truly, like, okay, this is it. And then what happened was that it changed. And I realized that it wasn't about weight loss, but it's about health gain. Mm. And so whereas I had been eating less to lose weight and exercising to lose weight, my whole world shifted. I quit dieting and I started living for how good can I feel? What is the best version of me? And that's how I kept it off.
Yeah.
You know, I still eat indulgent things, but I just am more cautious.
Yeah. I think to me, it sounds like it's a mental way of dealing with life, food, and being positive with yourself too.
It has a lot to do with positivity. I really do. I practice journaling. I practice meditation. I have a concept that I'm working on called Good and Good For You.
That's next on my list to talk about that.
Okay, good, good. I love that. So it's like, it's as long as you're doing what's good and good for you, more often than not, then you're heading in the right direction. It's like the always better here at the ranch, right? It's like, what can I do to improve? And we get so hung up on perfection. We get so hung up on like, okay, I've got to lose weight. I've got to eat this way. I've got to exercise. I've got to exercise 7 days a week. And you know, you've been in this industry right. a while. It's just not realistic.
So tell me, is the Good and Good For You, is that a brand that you've come up with?
Yes, it's a brand and it's still evolving, but at present it is now just trying to encourage people. If a postmenopausal French-trained Southern chef can lose 65 pounds and change her life, then I fully believe that someone else can too. And I also had a serious back injury that was re-aggravated, and I had to exercise my way out of that. It was complicated further by the fact that COVID, and I wasn't able to have the surgery. So I just sort of kept working in this direction of healthy and strong, and the little things added up. And so that is the basis of sort of Good and Good For You. As long as we're trying, as long as we're sort of heading in that direction of doing what is good and good for us, and that means mind, soul, and belly, mind, body, spirit, that we can be the best version of ourselves.
So how do people get on that? And what is that content? Is it you share, besides recipes, I'm sure you share other things too.
So the best ways to find Good and Good For You newsletter is at my website, which is virginiawillis.com, and they can sign up. And I love it. I include in each edition is a healthy recipe that's easy, something that a home cook wants to make that's not overwhelming, that's not daunting. I also share mocktail recipes. Reducing the alcohol consumption was a big part of my health journey and weight loss. I still drink, but I just drink less, and I'm just more specific and plan. I plan alcohol consumption as opposed to, hey, it's 5 o'clock.
Yeah.
And then also with the newsletter, I have a best life living tip, a little self-care technique. And then I try to share someone that's inspirational because we all need inspiration. I'm planning to feature Chef Raina. I think that she's incredibly inspirational. I love her spirit. So it's just a little quick read because we're all so busy. We're all inundated with content. I want someone to be able to pick up their phone, give it a scan through and think, oh, that's an interesting looking tip. I want to click through. And so it's mostly links, but every edition includes a healthy recipe that someone can make at home.
Right. Can you give me an example of a self-care tip that you have used, that you've shared?
So one of my favorite self-care techniques, it's just crazy. It's talking about, say, like lotion. Like we put on lotion. I mean, it just sounds so silly. But what I try to think about is it's part of a domino effect, or it's part of a web. So if you're trying to eat healthy and you're trying to take care of your body, as opposed to thinking that like lotion, putting on lotion is just something like body maintenance, it's actually part of self-care. And if you do the self-care, it can also transition into being somewhat ritual. And that ritual brings importance and purpose, and it transforms and it just becomes part of the greater effort to be the best person that you are. And a best life living tip, one of the things that I'm going to talk about in an upcoming issue is whole grains. Like we hear about whole grains all the time, but it really is like making that difference. One of the recipes I'm going to be sharing soon is about grits. People think that grits are super unhealthy, that they're always butter and always cheese and always cream. If you get good stone ground grits, it's a whole grain. It has fiber. It has healthy fats. It's good and good for you. And it can taste good too.
Yeah. I mean, I was only in Atlanta once, but every restaurant I went to had grits on the menu somewhere. So
yeah.
It's a very traditional kind of thing. So
it's a very traditional thing.
But it can be healthy, which is great, right?
Yeah.
So I noticed that all your classes are sold out. Your evening dinner is sold out. So people love what you're doing. And I would take a class from you just because I love your spirit and being around you. So
thank you so much. My health journey, I not only lost weight, I feel like I gained a lot. When I was unhappy and unhealthy, quite frankly, not that I was contemplating any sort of self-harm, but I didn't know why I was here. I didn't know why I was alive. And that's a terrible place to be. And so when I was able to make that transition to help myself, what has given me more purpose is that I can help other people too. And I feel especially both men and women for certain, but I feel like that there's a hard place, very particularly for some middle-aged women. They've been married, they may be divorced, they've lost their kids, or their kids have gone off to school rather. And I want to share with people that it's never too late to do things to make your life better.
100%. And I find you super inspiring. And I know a lot of people find you inspiring. So you're a chef here at the ranch at least once a year, right?
Yes, it's really, truly, Barry. I'm not kidding. It's one of the favorite things that I get to do in my career. It's the reset of being immersed into an environment that is mind, body, and spirit, to be around the staff. The wonder of seeing people that have worked here for decades, that it's multi-generational, obviously that speaks to the environment, to see the grounds and the gardens and to get to see the passion of everyone. It's very fulfilling, and it feeds me in a way that being a chef at another fancy resort just simply doesn't do. This Rancho La Puerta is undoubtedly a beautiful, beautiful place.
Yeah, it is a unique place. And we love having you here.
Thank you.
So people can go to virginiawillis.com to find out all your stuff.
Yes, please.
You can go to our events calendar to see when you'll be here next. And I look forward to seeing you later today here at the ranch. Thank you for spending the time.
Thank you so much. And bon appetit, y'all.
Bon appetit, y'all. Thanks so much.
I learned some interesting things today from my conversation with guest chef Virginia Willis. For example, I learned who James Beard was and what the James Beard Foundation Award really means and why it's so important, especially in the cooking world. I learned what a Michelin star is and how it got started from Michelin tires. Who would have known? I had no idea. I also learned that Southern cooking, in my mind, I always think of it as deep fried and unhealthy, but it's not inherently unhealthy. And Chef Virginia has lots of ways to make it super healthy. And probably the most important gift I got from today's conversation is to find your purpose. Virginia was lucky enough at 25 to realize her passion was cooking and being a chef. She also learned later in life that you can change your life at any time. In her 50s, she lost 65 pounds, changed her lifestyle, and now shares her gifts with others. So remember, whatever it is that we want to accomplish, whatever we want to do, we can do it. It doesn't matter where we are in our lives. Until next time, this is Barry wishing you health and daily joy.